and surpass penetrating and imperfect karma, is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth about the Bhagavad's words.
Good morning. So we're in the second week of the practice period, and on our Wednesday class at Bonnie's, we've been studying the Lotus Sutra. There's 28 chapters, we've only got 6 classes, so I'm going to bring some of the Lotus Sutra into Sunday, so you can, those of you that are not in the class, can help participate. So just to remind you, the Lotus Sutra is called the King of the Sutras, and the reason why it's called the King of the Sutras is because it, not because it's so complicated, you know. In fact, it's actually pretty simple. Of all the Mahayana sutras, it's the easiest one to actually read and understand. That's one reason why it's called the King of the Sutra, because it's so inclusive that around the 2nd century BC, it became more obvious that Buddhism needed a little reformation. The meditation techniques and the practices that mostly were being practiced by monks, and it wasn't extended to the laity. The lay people were pretty much there. The way they practiced was to support the monks. So there was a kind of a reformation, and it said, no, let's extend this. Let's try to make this practice more expansive. Let's not just meditation, but the whole idea of love and compassion, and including everybody. So there was much more of an emphasis on love and compassion, and not just studying how the mind works. So the Lotus Sutra was written, and after some of the other major sutras, and some of the other major sutras actually were a little kind of denigrated the earlier practices. You said, well, they don't really have it. Really, it's not really where it's at. Where it's at is this new body of scriptures. But the Lotus Sutra came along and said, no, that's not really true. All the ways of practicing are really helpful. And everybody that's practicing is included under what they call the Lotus Sutra, called the one vehicle. Traditionally, the three areas of practice were like the Sravakins, which were the people who just came and listened to the Dharma, interested in the Dharma, and really listened to the Dharma. And that actually included even the Buddhist disciples. Then the next were what they call the Pratyeka Buddhists, were the ones that really practiced and kind of got the Dharma and actually had a sense of enlightenment. But then as Buddhism progressed, the next was the path of the Bodhisattva, where not only were you enlightened, but you really saw that what it was about was helping all people, trying to relieve all suffering. But the Lotus Sutra came along and said, no, we're going to include all these, even though we really want to emphasize the Bodhisattva practice, but even at each level, everything is important. And let's try to create a sutra that is accessible to people and everybody. So this became abundantly clear to me, and if people in the class, if you don't mind, you already practiced, you know the chorus. I was at a birthday party for a Dharma sister of mine, and there was a wonderful, just a couple that are married, a clarinet and a guitar, and they were just kind of playing swing music, 20-30 swing music, you know, for our particular age group, no hip hop. And at the end, there were, you know, maybe a quarter of the people there were Buddhists, and the guitar player actually was a practitioner. He says, well, I've got this little song that I like called, from the Lotus Sutra, called Never Disparaging Bodhi. It's about this Bodhisattva, this kind of saint, and I'll just sing it for you. And the whole idea of the Lotus Sutra became very abundantly clear, that what the Lotus Sutra does is always finding creative ways to inspire people to be their best, to be the most connected and helpful to other people. And I was watching all the people that weren't Buddhists listen to this little song, and people were encouraged. They liked it. There were smiles on their face. And so I thought maybe we could do it. Unfortunately, I'm not have a very good voice, and there are a few people in here, like Connie's not here, but maybe I can get her to learn how to sing it, and eventually we'll sing it. But today I'm going to do, I'm just going to say it in prose, because the Lotus Sutra originally was in poetry, because that was originally orally, and then translated into, you know, kind of prose. And then later over the centuries, verse was added to it to kind of elaborate and make some of the, just like poetry, appropriately, you have to kind of search for the meaning, they added it in verse. So I'm going to do the kind of prose part, and then you're going to do the chorus. Okay, so when the chorus comes, that's you. Okay, here we go. You need to share with somebody. If you don't have a sheet. Yes, Rebecca.
Does this actually have a tune that you
yes.
have to?
Yeah, it does. But I'm not going to give it to you because I'm not very good at that.
Well,
but eventually...
Is it a well-known tune, or is it a tune that was
no,
made
No, it's not.
For this?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Got it.
Okay. There is a book called the Lotus Sutra you really ought to know about. A holy book that has the power to remove all fear and doubt. And this book tells the story of a man who means the world to me, who could just as well have been a woman if not for male hegemony. They call him the Bodhisattva Never Disparage, or the Bodhisattva Never Despise. And I'm making it my life's ambition to see the world through his pure eyes. I would never disparage you or keep you at arm's length. You only see your weaknesses as I only see your strength. I would never despise you or put you down in any way, because if you were to me, I can plainly see you'll be a Buddha someday. I love you. Now, Bodhisattva Never Disparaging lived countless kalpas in the past. In a time of counterfeit Dharma, he was something of an outcast. Because the monks and nuns of his time were noted for arrogance and vanity, and these were the folks who exercised great power and authority. But my boy never concerned himself if they treated him like a freak. He just bowed to everyone equally, and these were the words he'd speak. I would never disparage you or keep you at arm's length. You only see your weaknesses, I only see your strength. I would never despise you or put you down in any way, because if you're with me, I can plainly see you will be a bliss someday. I love you. He never read or recited the scriptures much. He only liked to practice respect. But the monks and nuns of his time didn't meet it like you might expect. Instead, they cursed him and reviled him, and they wished that he'd go away, because they all had self-esteem issues, like most everyone else, I know. They beat him and pelted him with clubs and stones and tried to drive him away, but he just run off to a safe distance, and he'd turn around and say,
I never disparage you or keep you at arm's length. You only see your weaknesses, I only see your strength. I would never despise you or put you down in any way, because if you're me, I can plainly see you'll be a Buddha someday. I love you.
And so it went on for years and years. He was the target of scorn and abuse. Yet still our hero shed no tears, nor did he wonder what's the use. Until it reached the end of his natural lifespan and he laid down fixing to die, and then heard the Lotus Sutra being preached up in the sky, and his life was extended for millions of years, and he's living to this day. And in the pages of the Lotus Sutra, you can hear him say,
I will never disparage you or keep you at arm's length. You only see your weaknesses, I only see your strength. I would never despise you or put you down in any way. Because it's clear to me, I can clearly see you'll be the business of the day.
So there you have the Lotus Sutra. So that's just one bodhisattva, never disparaging. So by getting a sense of a picture, a story of what that Buddha, how he lived his life, I think can be of some help and some assistance to us. And you know, I listened to it at the party, and so I walked up to the musician, and I said, you know, I'm going to teach the Lotus Sutra class, and I wonder, you know, I don't quite know where to. I know this before, but I don't know where to get a copy. Do you think you could email me a copy? So he just picks it up and gives it to me. So, you know, there was a little, I thought, kind of a manifestation of the Lotus Sutra in action right there. His kind of generosity to me wanting to extend the Lotus Sutra out. So, and one thing which is very important, that it happens again and again in the Lotus Sutra, that all the monks and nuns that disparaged Bodhisattva, never, you know, disparaging, all became Bodhisattvas in the future. And so you see that happen again and again. Characters are presented in the Lotus Sutra. And one of the things you have to kind of come to grips with in the Lotus Sutra is it shifts from present reality to future and past reality. It kind of does away with our normal concept of time and space. You know, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of bodhisattvas in the past and in the future. And like there'll be a character in the story that, you know, that'll be, they'll tell his story and they'll say, but you know, he actually becomes the future Buddha in the future. So all these people that disparaged this bodhisattva, never disrespectful, all became Buddhas in the future. And so that's the message. The message is that you treat everybody, you try to treat everybody as a Buddha. You see the Buddha in them. You see the potential in them. And so the main... So let me just say a few things about this, which maybe don't need to be said because it's all pretty obvious. But maybe not so obvious, you know. So, because we don't really go around, you know, it isn't like we go around and have a lot of disrespect, you know, serious disrespect for people or maybe disparage people. You know, that's a little, you know, it's kind of like the precept that says don't kill. Well, we don't go around and kill. But what the precept is saying is, don't harm, you know, or be kind is what that, be connected is what that precept is really saying. So what this precept is saying is be more subtle in your understanding of what this is. Not so much, you know, maybe that you disrespect people, but how about that subtle quality of mind that's a little critical or a little judgmental? And you tend to see the qualities in people that you don't like. And what the attitude of the bodhisattva is, of this bodhisattva, is that what his practice is to try to see those ways that he can connect with people. And so I've said this again and again, the teaching that I always, they're so powerful to me with the bodhisattva, somebody like the Dalai Lama, is he's always connecting and talking about those things that connect. Not the things that are, how we're different, but those things that unify us, that we all, again and again, he says, that we just want to be happy, even though the way we manifest that sometimes is not particularly skillful or helpful in the long run. But we just want to be happy. We want our kids to be happy. We want to feel safe. That's what we want. We want to be able to practice our religion you know, and get some support from our religion, from our own particular way manifesting spirituality in our life, you know. And if we could just connect at that level with what the kind of the universality of what we all need and want in our life. And how, what keeps us from doing that, you know, the qualities of our own self-absorption. I've been paying particularly particular attention lately in conversations, how it's almost a rule in many conversations that the idea is to see how much you can kind of dominate the conversation with your own agenda. You know, like you'll sort of half listen to the other person's conversation, just waiting for an open where you can insert and kind of bring the conversation back to yourself. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, I do a little bit of competition there, you know, who's got the most interesting life? Mm-hmm. I notice some smiles. And I notice it myself. You know, I'll be having a dinner party with people and you just kind of wait for, well, I should have equal time, you know, rather than a sense of how do we really, what this bodhisattva is encouraging us to do is to honor other people, you know, to really encourage other people, to encourage ourselves. And maybe that's one of the main, one of the beautiful things about this sutra is it's encouraging you to see yourself as a bodhisattva. You know, in the past, in the early, when the idea of the bodhisattva was being developed, often the pictures of the bodhisattvas are depicted in like kind of regal, like jewelry, and like prince and princesses. The idea being, you know, for common people, like, well, this is something to really be revered and looked up to. But the Lotus Sutra begins to, you don't get a sense that a bodhisattva, never disparaging, walked around in regal clothing, probably in very humble monk's clothing. And the people that he respected and treated as a bodhisattva weren't people. It wasn't important for them to be dressed regally. He addressed everybody, no matter what their status in society was, as a bodhisattva. He treated them with that kind of respect. The other thing it says in here, again and again in the Lotus Sutra, it says, if you read, study, recite, and teach the Lotus Sutra, you know, innumerable blessings will befall you. But it makes it a point here to say two things which are interesting. One is that he didn't study the sutras. He wasn't a scholar. You know, when you study the Prajnaparamita literature, like the Heart Sutra, you can sense it's profound, but it's difficult to kind of wrap yourself around. If you were just to teach the Heart Sutra, you know, people don't get that on the first run-through. I've been studying it for 40 years, and I still don't. You know, I still feel like I'm trying to absorb what the Heart Sutra is. But this is pretty... You chant something like this verse of the Bodhisattva Never Disparaging, and you get it. You kind of get it immediately. So it isn't about study or intellectualization. It's about how you relate to other people, how you actually practice in life. So the two main thrusts of the Lotus Sutra are, one, it's all together, we're all together. And even though you may be a Stravakan and you're just interested in the Dharma at this level and you're not so interested in helping other people, you just want to get your own trip together, that's okay. That's a path. That's a part of the path. And we really honor and appreciate that. So that's a very important point. The other point, which is that it makes it a point to say that this is a... this bodhisattva exists in a time and space beyond our own where it's a little bit of a counterfeit dharma. Which means, and again, you'll see this in Buddhist teachings, there's the different stages of the dharma. There's this dharma where Shakyamuni is teaching. You know, it's very alive. In fact, you don't even really need a statue of Buddha because the memory is so great, the practice is so great. You know, 400 years, they didn't even have a statue. A Buddha. Just his hand and maybe his feet were depicted, but even then, that was much later. And then you get the next stage happens where people practice of it, maybe not so much. And so this is the stage where Bodhisattva Nirvana Disparaging is, where the Dharma is, it's around and people are practicing, but not at the level that they were practicing with that kind of fervor and intensity. And then the next stage and the next stage are more stages where people know about the Dharma. They know about it, but they don't preach it. So in the Lotus Sutra, they don't really talk much about the third and fourth stage. They talk a lot about the first and second, and that's helpful because we all go through that stage. We all, you know, you go to a retreat and you're very fired up and you're actually, your mind's pretty clear, and for a couple of weeks you're really bringing your sense of mindfulness into your practice. You're doing walking meditation as you're, you know, during the day. You aren't just sitting in the morning and then kind of forgetting about it to when you sit again. You're really bringing practices through your day. It's very alive for you, you know. And then you, but there are times when you slip and you, and the Dharma is not so present. You know, you show up on Sunday and you think, well, what happened between last Sunday and this Sunday? Or where was practice really in my life, you know? So what this is saying a little bit is, that's okay. There's something okay about that. That don't be discouraged. That every bit of effort that you put forward will encourage you and move you along the Bodhisattva path. Please see yourself as a Bodhisattva. Please, when you walk, walk as a Buddha walks right now. That's what the sutra is trying to encourage you. And so even, you know, when we relate to one another, these things where sometimes we're just polite, you know, we're mostly kind of self-absorbed or a little critical of other people, we still shake their hand or maybe we embrace them kind of half-heartedly, or how are you doing, but we don't really maybe care so much. But even those things are important. Even though we're only halfway there, you know. It's kind of like in bowing practice. One of my practices is I get up in the morning and try to bow three times, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And some days I can barely, you know, I sort of don't want to do it. My body's a little creaky. I don't want to get down on the floor. You know, I want to just do a standing bow, or I want to do a real quick bow. But other days, I'm really there. I can really put myself into Buddha. Who's the Buddha as I go down? You know, who's the Buddha? Who's the Buddha in me? I really do it as a practice. So I have a sense of real appreciation. But I don't do that every day. I can't kind of bring that energy to it. So the Lotus Sutra says, it's okay. It's okay. You know, both practice hard, but be gentle on yourself. In fact, there's even a little phrase in the second chapter of the Lotus Sutra, and it says, and this is a very important phrase, it says, if anyone, even while distracted, with even a single flower, makes an offering to a painted image, they will progress to see countless Buddhas. So even though you may have a Buddha in a museum, and people go and they sort of know about Buddhism, but it's mostly just aesthetics and art, don't discount that. You know, I told you the story when I was a kid. I went to see the sculpture of Avalokiteshvara. I had no idea what that sculpture was or what Buddhism was. But there was something about that that planted a seed that helped me. I really feel it helped me in my dharma path. So I thought what maybe would be helpful is, for a while we haven't done the precepts, and really what Bodhisattva Nirvana Disparaging is really helping us with, particularly one of the precepts, which is don't criticize others. Don't disparage others. You know, there's three of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts that have to do with speech. One is don't lie or tell the truth or be kind in your speech. And the other is be humble about how you talk about yourself. You know, don't disparage, you know, don't disparage yourself, but don't put yourself above others. And the other is, of course, almost, they're very similar. So it's very important you get three in there that has to do with speech. about don't disparage other people. But there's also a point that's important here. Is it doesn't say in here that you never criticize people. There's actually a phrase, there's actually a part in chapter 4 in the Lotus Sutra where the father, often the Buddha is kind of represented as the father, which is important also. It's not some omnipotent god that's up there that never makes a mistake. It's more like a father that's really concerned about your welfare, you know, and concerned how you're really doing. It's much more kind of immediate, the sense of feeling of who the Buddha is, even though it's much more expansive than just the historical Buddha. So, anyway. So the three of how to do right speech. So let's all, if you don't have a chant book, maybe let's get a chant book and we'll go through and do the precepts. We haven't done that for a while. And so I'll, again, if somebody could give me, I didn't bring my copy with me.